Hello, and welcome to Bedrock, a podcast on Earth's earliest history. I'm your host, Dylan Wilmeth. Episode 32, Pumping Iron. For the past two episodes, we have visited a remote patch of seaside tundra in northern Quebec in the lands of the Inuit. This area is called Nuvuagetuk, and is tied for the second oldest rocks on Earth. Around 3.8 billion years ago, early March on the Earth calendar. Nuvuagetuk is our first tangible glimpse onto Earth's surface, onto rocks that preserve physical traces of ancient seafloors. Last episode, we set the scene with volcanic rocks, our old friend basalt. By looking carefully at Nuvuagetuk basalts, we learned two things. One, this frozen tundra was once a chain of undersea volcanoes erupting dark, lumpy pillow lavas. Two, these volcanoes were probably next to a deep ocean trench. At the very least, seawater was mixing with Earth's mantle deep below to make rare volcanic rocks called bonanites. In the modern day, bonanites are found on the islands of Guam, Iwo Jima, and others next to the Mariana Trench, the deepest part of the sea. So, what else was going on 3.8 billion years ago on the seafloor? Today, we'll meet a completely different kind of rock. This rock is a cornerstone of modern industry, one of the most important rocks we'll meet on the show. And yet, it is a rock that is impossible to make on the modern Earth. Before we learn about the rock's importance and its weirdness, we need to go back to basics. Part 1. Meet Biff. In episode 2, we learned the three recipes for rocks: igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary. Since then, we've focused on the first two recipes. The samples we've met have either been igneous rocks, made from lava or magma, or metamorphic rocks, the pressure-cooked remains of previous stones. Finally, it's time to meet the last family, sedimentary rocks. If you can't tell, I'm really excited for this one, since I'm a sedimentary geologist by trade. As a brief recap, sedimentary rocks form when loose particles of sediment settle and solidify in water. Usually, these particles are the broken pieces of other rocks, such as pebbles, sand, and mud. Sand turns into sandstone, mud turns into mudstone, etc. But there are other ways to make sediments, ones that don't need to break down any other rocks. Some stones crystallize straight out of water, just like rock candy in a glass of sugar water. These special water-grown stones are called chemical sedimentary rocks, since they form when the chemistry of water changes. The best examples are limestone and rock salt. If you leave a glass of salt water in the sun, salt crystals will eventually line the bottom. If you don't clean your bathtub in a long time, lime will eventually form a mucky crust. The same thing happens in nature. Tweak the temperature, tweak the chemistry, and you'll get new minerals popping out of water and settling to the bottom. Today, you can find limestones in coral reefs and rock salt in dry seas, and we will see spectacular examples of both in later seasons. But there are some ancient rocks that cannot be made today. The world has changed too much. All the rocks we've met so far, the gneisses and tonalites, basalts and bonanites, are still being made as we speak. but our next subject is literally an extinct rock. A window on a different age with very different chemistry. This rock is called Banded Iron Formation, which is usually shortened to BIF. I'll use both to keep things fresh. I like the name Banded Iron Formation. It tells you what the rock looks like and what's in it. BIFs have beautiful alternating bands of dark gray and blood red, like a stone tiger pelt. BIFs are not the first stripy rock we've seen. In episode 25, we met the Acasta Gneiss with zebra stripes of black and white. But even though the patterns look similar, they formed in completely different ways, and it's worth a brief digression. The Acasta Gneiss and all gneisses are metamorphic rocks. Their stripes were earned deep underground, literally squeezed like an accordion by intense pressure. In contrast, sedimentary rocks like BIFs earned their stripes in water, as grains of sand, mud, or iron fall to the seafloor, they form thin, flat layers. As more grains fall, new layers form, building upwards like a giant, gritty layer cake. You can see these layers yourself if you dig down into a beach or look down into a construction pit. Sedimentary layers can be read like rings on a tree. Each layer is a snapshot of the ancient world, and as you work your way, layer by layer, these snapshots turn into a movie, a story of change over time. This is exactly what scientists have done with ancient BIFs in Nouveau-Aquitouc, Quebec, 3.8 billion years old. But before we can read these stories, we need to know what the layers are made of in the first place. Along the way, we'll learn just how important ancient BIFs are to the modern world. Part 2. From Iron to Steel. Let's start by learning what the red and gray layers inside a BIF are made of. While the rusty red layers are very striking, we won't spend much time on them today, for two reasons. First, these layers likely formed later in history. They don't tell us as much about the ancient oceans. And second, despite their rusty appearance, the red layers don't have that much iron. For reference, imagine a clear glass of water. Now add just a drop or two of food coloring. It doesn't take a lot to turn water red, and the same is true of certain minerals. We will return to these red layers, but not today. In contrast, the steely gray layers are rich in iron minerals, crystals with various recipes of iron and oxygen. The two most important iron minerals are magnetite and hematite. You don't need to memorize them right now, but they will be frequent guests of the show. In brief, magnetite is magnetic, hematite less so. But together, inside banded iron formations, these two characters are the backbone of the modern steel industry. BIFs provide 2/3 of the world's iron ore, and nearly all that iron is turned into steel. Steel is a crucial part of today's world. It's nearly impossible to avoid. From steel frames inside buildings and cars, to everyday items like cutlery and steel wool. As you go about your day, try to find all the items that have steel around you. I would bet good money they all started as an ancient banded iron formation. Unlike gold or silver, iron is rarely found as a pure metal, ready to use immediately. For thousands of years, the best way to get pure iron was from a meteorite as we learned way back in episode 5. For example, in Greenland, a single giant meteorite supplied tools for Inuit across the Arctic. In ancient Egypt, King Tut's tomb contained 19 treasures made from iron meteorites, including a gold-hilted dagger, which I think is impossibly cool. Pure metal iron is so rare because iron loves oxygen. Once they meet, they're hard to separate. Pure iron can easily make tools, but iron plus oxygen becomes crystals, like our new friends magnetite and hematite, or just plain old rust. You can't really make a dagger out of rust. And so, from the Iron Age to the present, one of humanity's major quests is turning rust back into usable metal. All you need to do is strip that pesky oxygen off, and you're in business. This is usually done inside furnaces, filled with deadly carbon monoxide, which plucks the oxygen off rust. The end results are carbon dioxide, an old frenemy of the show, and metallic iron, which can now be turned into steel. Which brings us back to the beginning. Where does the original iron ore come from, where we pull it from the earth? For thousands of years, humans had to hunt for small, rusty pockets in the ground. And then, in 1844, the first banded iron formations were found in northern Michigan, and then around the world. The largest BIFs cover thousands of square miles and thousands of feet thick. It was a bonanza. Today, BIFs supply more than 100 million tons of iron each year. It is hard to overstate the importance of BIFs in your modern life. And yet, BIFs are no longer forming today. All the ones we're mining are billions of years old. What was different back then? And how were these BIFs made in the first place, especially the oldest ones in Nuvwagittuk, 3.8 billion years ago? Part 3. Life's Leftovers. Despite the supreme economic importance of BIF, its origins are still debated. But it gets better, folks. The debate over BIFs is part of a much larger debate over early oxygen. It's a regular nesting doll of debates over here. The oxygen debate is way too large to tackle in one episode, but here's what we need to know today. Earth's modern atmosphere has 20% oxygen. The Earth's first atmosphere had none. Clearly, something happened in between. Scientists agree on what happened. Life learned how to make oxygen. Plants are still doing it today. What scientists don't agree on is the timing. Some researchers think life was farting out oxygen very early in season 2, where we are right now. Others argue for a very late arrival, season 6 on the show. Most folks are somewhere in between. Oxygen will be a multi-season arc on this show. So where do BIFs fit in? Most BIFs were formed somewhere in this wide window of time, starting in season 2 and disappearing after season 6, mostly. We just learned that oxygen loves iron. They're locked together inside every BIF. So it's no surprise that BIFs are a possible clue in oxygen's early history. Today, we'll briefly learn two ways to make a BIF. Both contestants start in the same place, but go in very different directions. It's time to play Is This Your BIF? Contestant 1 is the classic recipe, iron plus oxygen. We start at the bottom of the ancient ocean. Last episode, we learned that Nouveau-Wagatouk in Quebec was a series of undersea volcanoes. These volcanoes were not only pumping out lava, they were also boiling the water around them, creating a rich soup of minerals and elements, including iron. The dark, cloudy soup belched up into the deep sea through giant natural chimneys. These towers are called black smokers, and they're still around today. To learn more about this primordial soup and how it kickstarted life on Earth, check out episode 22. But today, we're interested in the iron. This marine iron wasn't pure metal, and it wasn't rust either. It was simply dissolved in the water, like sugar or salt. To turn this invisible iron into a biff, an extra step was needed. Oxygen. It's hard to make lots of oxygen without life involved. Today, most oxygen is made by plants or algae, but neither were around 3.8 billion years ago. In fact, we don't have well-accepted fossils of any life back then, though most folks think it was probably around. If we assume that life was present, there is one other oxygen maker to consider. It's a special group of bacteria called cyanobacteria, or cyanos for short. Cyanos are a large family of microbes, taking many shapes, from long rods to raspberries to curling spirals. You can't see individual cells without a microscope, but I guarantee you, you've seen their colonies on beaches and shores as frothy, green pond scum. This pond scum is easy to confuse with more complex algae. For many years, cyanos were mislabeled as blue-green algae, a name that stuck on many beach signs. Now, apart from plants and real algae, cyanobacteria are the only living things that make oxygen on planet Earth, and the first ones to do so. Plants literally stole this ability from cyanos, but that's a story for another day. In fact, cyanobacteria will be our most frequent living guest on the show. They sit at the center of many ancient debates. Which brings us back to Nouveau-Wagatouk, 3.8 billion years ago. Do we see any fossil cyanos trapped inside the biffs? No. In fact, many biffs do not contain fossils, and when they do, we can't easily ID them as specific bacteria. However, some would argue that the biffs themselves are proof of ancient life. If you need a lot of oxygen to make biff, and you need cyanobacteria to make a lot of oxygen, well, then you need cyanos to make biff. Case closed, right? Well, if oxygen was floating around 3.8 billion years ago, we should see many other changes in chemistry. In a nutshell, we don't, and we won't, for some time to come. Contestant 1 is a viable option, but not for the Nouveau-Wagatouk samples. But it turns out there are craftier ways to smash oxygen and iron together, which brings us to Contestant 2. Contestant 2 starts in the same spot as Contestant 1, with black smokers belching iron into the deep sea. But if there's no oxygen made by life, then how can we make a biff? Turns out, I've been a bit sneaky with my language, and for that, I apologize. When you and I talk about oxygen every day, we're usually talking about O2, the invisible gas that keeps us alive. In science, we call this free oxygen, not because it's free of charge, because it's pure, uncut, free to mingle around. Free oxygen is what plants, algae, and cyanobacteria make, and what we breathe. But there's a lot of oxygen that isn't free, that's bound to other elements. Oxygen plus hydrogen is water. Oxygen plus carbon is CO2. Oxygen plus silicon is quartz, and so on. In short, the ancient Earth didn't have breathable air with free oxygen, but there were still plenty of other sources to steal from. Now, iron can't really steal oxygen from water or from CO2 by itself. It needs help from somewhere else. It needs help from life. That's right, our second contestant still needs bacteria to work. It just doesn't need cyanobacteria. It's a process you can still see today on a nature hike. If you walk through a swamp or a forest with a slow, sluggish stream, you might notice something odd. Patches of bright orange ooze on the riverbed. This is not a fungus or pollution. This is natural rust forming thanks to bacteria. Bedrock isn't a biology podcast, so I'll keep things simple. These bacteria use dissolved, invisible iron as an energy source. Using this iron, plus water, and CO2 as ingredients, the bacteria grow and produce rusty iron minerals as an orange byproduct. To make this recipe, the bacteria need water with very little free oxygen, which would steal the iron all for itself. Because these microbes directly interact with iron, we call them iron-oxidizing bacteria. They won't be as common as cyanos on the show, but they will be frequent guests. So, is this your Biff? Possibly. Remember, modern bacteria make small, rusty patches in swamps all the time, almost like mini-Biffs. While swamp water is not the best analog for the ancient Archean Ocean, both places have one thing in common. Very little free oxygen. In some cases, swamps produce enough iron to mine commercially. It's called bog iron, and bog iron was a decent source before its bigger, older Biff brothers were discovered. But let's step out of the bogs for now, and back to Nuvwakotok, 3.8 billion years ago, the oldest Biffs on Earth. There are other hypotheses about Biff formation, but these are the big two. Either green cyanobacteria were farting out oxygen, which mingled with iron, or iron-oxidizing bacteria were directly making rust themselves. For the moment, people are leaning towards option two, the bog iron option, and I'm inclined to agree, though Biffs aren't exactly my expertise. In either case, this is really big news. Even if we see a Biff with no fossils inside, there's a decent chance life was kicking around 3.8 billion years ago. Biffs are not direct fossils, but after our long, winding journey through life's origins last season, it's something we can hold on to. Life has finally made its mark on the planet. But wouldn't it be neat if we found some real fossilized cells in these Biffs, some feature we could point to and say, that's the oldest fossil on Earth? Wouldn't it indeed? In 2017, a team of researchers found something very interesting inside the Nuvwakotok Biffs. If they're correct, it's a landmark in paleontology. If they're not, what the heck did they find? Tune in next time to see where that story leads us. Summary. Banded iron formations are incredibly important rocks for researchers and for humanity. BIFs are a cornerstone of the modern steel industry, providing billions of tons of iron around the world. BIFs also give a unique glimpse into the early Earth, a world with vanishingly little free oxygen. Nouveau-Aquitouc, in northern Quebec, has one of the oldest BIFs on Earth, around 3.8 billion years ago, March 3rd, on the Earth calendar. They're not the largest BIF, but they give us the most tangible evidence yet for life's presence, whether that life was green, like plants, or orange, like bog iron. Next time, we'll spend an entire episode on one heated debate. Does Nouveau-Aquitouc have the oldest fossils on Earth? Thank you for listening to Bedrock, a part of Bee Giants Media. If you like what you've heard today, please take a second to rate our show wherever you are. Just a simple click of the stars, no words needed unless you feel like it. If just one person rates the show every week or tells a friend, that makes us more visible to other curious folks. It always makes my day, and that one person could be you. You can drop me a line at bedrock.mailbox@gmail.com. See you next time.